Fidel Mossad joins me on the programme now. Fidel, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Greg, for having me on.
Right, we heard from Donald Trump yesterday. It's very hard to tell sometimes with him how much is off the cuff and how much is predetermined, but he unveiled a plan for the US to take long-term ownership of the Gaza Strip. He effectively said that he would. There's nothing there for anyone to go back to, that he would displace a population of 1.5 to 2 million people into Turkey or Jordan and effectively turn Gaza, you know, into a holiday destination, the Riviera of the Middle East, you know, million-dollar shorefront properties all under the ownership of the United States. We're used to hearing conversations about, you know, two-state, three-state solutions and so on and so forth. And yet here we are. This is really quite a remarkable intervention from the most powerful man in the world.
Absolutely. But let's not ignore the fact that right beside him sitting is a convicted criminal charged by the highest court on the land, by the ICC, for genocide. And yet he sits there in the White House, proud of his slaughtering and genocidal act of over 60,000 Palestinians so far, and over 70% of them are women and children. Now, Donald Trump is a racist, narcissistic person, sitting beside a racist, narcissistic person. And God help us that these two people are now thinking of ethnically cleansing the Palestinian people from Gaza. And that is the pure definition of ethnic cleansing. It is the mass expulsion or killing of members of one ethnic or religious group in an area by another. It's a systematic forced removal. It's illegal, absolutely illegal. And the world should stand up to this illegal act. And you know, it's the hypocrisy is still going on, and it is shameful. It's a disgrace that the world still sits on its hands. The EU, Ireland, the UK, everybody. They've allowed Netanyahu to travel to Poland for the memorial of the Holocaust while he is a convicted criminal by the International Criminal Court. What example are we giving to the young generation about this?
I mean, there are people will disagree strongly with your framing of the characters of both individuals.
People listening, Fidel.
But some people listening. But anyway, that's not the point. I'm just trying to put that out there. There was an irony in it as well, and quite interesting to see Donald Trump push the chair in behind Benjamin Netanyahu. I've not seen that kind of deference to someone ever before from a world leader, let alone Donald Trump. But, you know, he was talking of there's nothing to go back there, that it's rubble and that it's not safe and what have you. And yet the person responsible for that was sitting beside him, which...
Absolutely.
Was really quite Absolutely. Remarkable. Like the, it's not like yeah, this happened by the, accident. The person responsible yeah, for that destruction was there.
With a smirk on his face. I mean, they're talking about that Gaza is occupied by its people. They're talking about ethnically cleansing Palestinians. Palestinians live in Palestine. They deserve to live in Palestine. They belong in Palestine. You know, they have survived over 100 years of ethnic cleansing and occupation and 15 months of a genocide. And then they're sitting there talking about, oh, as if this all happened in a vacuum. And the person responsible for it, and a convicted criminal. Mm-hmm. Now, nobody disagrees that he's a convicted criminal, Greg. You know, you're telling me that people disagree. He has been convicted by the International Criminal Court.
And I think, too, that you know, people who would see themselves as critical thinkers need to think on this as well, because I'm not getting into the conversation now, but you could talk about Israel's attack on Gaza, and then someone might reference October 7th, which was horrendous, but then someone might say, well, it predates. But that I'm almost not putting that to one side, because what's happened is so horrendous, but people need to stop and think, if we're talking about a world leader going to the other side of the world and moving millions of people out of the country that they call home into other countries forcibly, effectively, what could happen? If that's accepted, it could be anywhere next. Do you know what I mean? So what, regardless about the sort of ongoing debate that people may or may not have, this is something completely different. We're talking about We're talking about something that could literally happen anywhere. We've seen Donald Trump's comments as it relates to Greenland and to Canada. You know, we don't really know what we're facing into. I'm not trying to be, you know, catastrophic in my description of it, but this is something that, regardless of people's general views, they need to look at and say, is this really where we want to go? Is this the kind of world that we want to live in now?
And this is exactly history repeating itself, because we remember what happened after the Second World War. We remember the world, the final solution. And this is exactly, it's applying right now, the final solution that Hitler wanted to do and to commit the crimes against the Jewish people. It's exactly the same now, where they're committing the crimes against the Palestinian people. So if it's happened before and it's happened again after so many years, I guarantee you it will happen again to any people. Imagine this is happening in Ireland. Imagine the UK comes in here and says, oh, we're ethnically cleansing everybody from Ireland. Do you know that 3% of the population of Gaza has been slaughtered? That's 75,000 people. Imagine 3% of 6 million, which is nearly the population of Ireland. What is that? 180,000 people dead. The population of Letterkenny is what, 20,000, 30,000? 75,000 of Palestinians have been slaughtered in the past 15 months.
We don't know,
Greg.
If...
And this is what we should talk about.
Of course, but we also have to... We have talked about that extensively on this programme, but we also have to talk to the future, and it's very hard to determine how serious Donald Trump is. Is he kite-flying? Is it some sort of a negotiation tactic? But be that as it may... like, as I said, we've already said, both of us have said, the world watches on, and he my question was, Fidel, this is what I wanted to get to. You know, the Palestinians can't actually resist this in a sense, okay? So you're going to rely on the international community to row in behind Palestine and oppose America in this situation. That really, that's the only path I can see. But United States is so strong, and Donald Trump is so influential, and we've seen with the threat of tariffs left, right, and center. My point is who is going to back the Palestinian people?
That's a great question, Greg. Who is going to back the Palestinian people except the Palestinian people themselves? You know, we've seen 15 months of genocide, and all of Europe and the EU and the UK and America and Ireland and everywhere else sit down on their hands and do nothing. Even they supplied them with weapons, tons and tons and tons of weapons, to kill 75,000, if not more, Palestinians. Let me tell you this, God is not a real estate agent, Greg, okay? And neither is the most criminal, narcissistic leader of the empire. Palestinians belong to Palestine. They have survived all this, and they survived to stay. We have seen pictures of Palestinians in Gaza returned to the north of Gaza, to their destroyed homes, and they're sweeping the floors of their destroyed, completely destroyed homes and hospitals and schools. What does that mean to people, that they want to leave? That Donald Trump wants them to leave because of their safety? They don't care about their safety. They care about their land. They belong there, and they have to stay there. And if nobody else is going to stand up for the Palestinian people, the Palestinian people will stand up for themselves. Unfortunately, that's what happened on the 7th of October. But let's look back what happened before the 7th of October. You know, all the wars, all the lawn mowing that Israel has done to Gaza, 76 years. And now it's happening now in Jenin. It's happening now in the West Bank. Mm-hmm. And do you hear anything about it?
People all should...
You know, thousands of families have been ethnically cleansed from their homes in the West Bank.
Well, we'd also note that, obviously, you know, much of the Western world is against Russia and Vladimir Putin for the annexing of Crimea in 2014. Mm-hmm. The world stood by effectively whilst that happened, and it was also said yesterday that the US is given strong consideration to recognizing the annexing of the West Bank as well, which is really not insignificant.
They're changing the whole narrative. I mean, the new ambassador to Israel is now denying the existence of West Bank. He's changing the language. He's denying that there's an occupation. You know, when people talk about, oh, Israel has the right to defend itself, they're not defending themselves, Greg. Let's get this clear. They're defending an oppressive occupation, a racist regime, a Zionist regime that have existed for so many years, over 100 years. And that's what they're defending. They're not defending their people. They're creating more and more hate crimes against Jews in this world. That's what they're doing. And we have seen people from Jewish heritage stand up for the Palestinian people, and they've been called anti-Semites, and they've been called Jew haters as well. Now, what the hell are we living in? What world are we creating when people who want to stand up for justice and international human rights, they are slandered by hate. They're slandered and accused of being self-haters. Nobody deserves to live in this world.
At the end of the day, I mean, in interviews like this, obviously, I challenge points and put opposing points of view across, because that's what you need to do to be fair and balanced. But
Let me finish.
Post October 7th, as horrendous as that was, and you could argue that a response was required. But what happened after that was collective responsibility. What happened to that was, no cost was put on innocent Palestinian lives. If it meant getting one Hamas person and 400 civilians, women and children had to die, well, then so be it. And even in the last throes of the Israel activity in Gaza, it was effectively to flatten whatever was left between the ceasefire being agreed and actually kicking in. So it's very hard for me to... I can see it with my own eyes, and I've sourced information independently myself. It's very hard to see. Mm-hmm. As horrendous as October 7th was, what came after that was the annihilation of a country and the indiscriminate killing of women and children. And it's very hard for me to see it any other way, to be honest with you.
And also what's horrendous is the over 100 years of oppression, of apartheid, of displacement, of refuge, of destruction of homes, of ethnic cleansing of 800,000 Palestinians back in 1948. That's also horrendous, Greg. So let's not ignore the history. No. Let's not ignore the fact. Let's not argue right and wrong on both sides. There's only one side here. There's a just side.
But one can't, of course, but one can't ignore the horrendous actions of October 7th. But it has to be framed in the wider context as well. And the one thing I will say, listeners to this show and the people of Donegal in general are and the Northwest are very aware of their history and what have you. I just wonder where this goes next, because, you know, as I say, who is going to stand up to the Trump administration if they pursue this? I know, say, for instance, one might say Iran might be inclined to, but we know the Americans and Israelis are looking for any excuse to go in and flatten that country as well. You just wonder what next. Turkey and Jordan, they're probably only holding out for a better deal for themselves and a slice of the Riviera in the Middle East. It's a very bleak... it's just amazing how the conversation has shifted now from two-state solutions, one-state solutions, and all the conversations that went before it to effectively, as you've described it, the ethnic cleansing of a people. It's a rapidly changing world we live in.
It is, and it's frightening. It's scary to raise kids in this type of world that we live in, to be honest. I work as a youth worker, and it's scary to imagine what these young people are looking at, what they're experiencing, what they're learning from these such leaders, racist, horrendous, hateful leaders that we have running the world. It's a crazy system, and it's frightening, to be honest. And I'm not a politician, Greg. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen in a few years. I have no idea. But please, let's not talk about peace. Let's talk about the liberation of the Palestinian people first before peace, okay?
Okay.
Let's give them justice. Let's give them the right to exist.
All right.
And then give them liberation, and then we will show the world what we can do with our country.
All right, Fidel, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. That's a Palestinian living in Donegal for some time now. Fidel Mossad, if you have a different point of view, get in touch, 086 6025000. And you know, I mean, obviously a lot of people hold Donald Trump in high regard, and, you know, I'm not American. But obviously you can't ignore when it has impacts around the world. And, you know, a lot of people would see Elon Musk as a hero and the saviour. But he's been given incredible unelected power. He's been given incredible access to people's private information, which is under the guise of allowing him to do his Doge work, right? But also at the end of the day, you know, he's in a very competitive market and he's got access to everyone's private personal information through the Department of Health, the Department of Education, and so on and so forth. And would anyone in this country want a billionaire having all that information on them, especially when they ran one of the biggest tech companies in the world? It's a very strange old world we are living in. Don't forget, coming up between now and 12, we're going to be joined by Chris Ashmore. But I have two in-studio guests with me now. We've got Kate Hennessy, artist and author of Dorothy Day, The World Will Be Saved by Beauty. Good morning to you, Kate. Thanks so much for calling in to us.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me.
We also have Brother Aid Green, director of a project which we're going to be talking about in Ards. Aid, thank you so much for your time. Right, okay, so where do we start? Do we talk about the retreat? Do we talk about Dorothy? Kate?
Well, both subjects are my favorite, among my favorite. I'll talk about Dorothy first because I think so much of what I do comes from who she was and growing up with her. Dorothy Day was an extraordinary person. And for those of you who don't know her, she is in the process of being considered for canonization. And that process is quite far along and very exciting. What she did, she changed the face of American Catholicism. I think it's safe to say, in that she was a convert. She became a Catholic in 1928, she became a Catholic. And she came from a very interesting background, a very radical background, a very political background, a very active background. She was a journalist, and she was very much in the world of New York City of the 1920s, which was an amazing place that really, really was alive with new art, new music, new thinking, new politics, and she was part of that. And then she became a Catholic, which completely surprised everyone, and she wanted to wed her Catholicism and her activism, her belief in the struggles of people in a way that made sense to her. And she, with the help of another fellow, Peter Morin, started a movement called the Catholic Worker Movement, which began during the Depression, the Great Depression, in which, you know, hundreds and thousands of people were out of work. And they started Houses of Hospitality, which provided food, clothing, and shelter for people in need. And that movement is worldwide now. There are over 200 Houses of Hospitality around the world, mostly in the U.S. And she's been dead since 1980, and there's no slowing down.
No, and in fact, she established a newspaper as well. It was a co-founder of a newspaper, 1933, and she worked on that newspaper right up until her passing.
Yes, she did. You know, as I mentioned, she was a journalist, so that was how she worked. That was her vocation. Writing was her vocation, and she started the Catholic Worker newspaper, penny a copy, started selling it on Union Square, next to the communists who were, you know, selling the Daily Worker, and they were out there selling the Catholic Worker. And to this day, the Catholic Worker paper is still being published, and it's still a penny a copy. And she did write for it. Well, she was really the publisher, editor, writer for many, many years. But even until her death in 1980, she was putting out a regular column.
And her life, her story, of course, as you've mentioned, the Catholic Church have opened the cause for Day's possible canonization. But for some time now, she had caught the attention of the hierarchy, so to speak, and her journey became, you know, an example of what other people can achieve.
Absolutely. She is, I think, one of the things, her strengths, she had many strengths, she was an amazing woman, is that she would say, we all can do this. You know, we are all called to be saints. And I can't say I know exactly what she meant by that, but she did believe that we all have a role to play and to help make a world where it's easier to be good, is one of her favorite phrases. And we can all do that in the simplest of ways. She, even though she thought big, and let me tell you, she did think big, she also understood the nature, the power of small steps that each of us can make in being generous, in being hospitable, in being kind to one another.
She may well become a saint. I wonder, would she be more comfortable with her current title as Servant of God?
I don't know. I can't, you know, she said famously that don't call me a saint. I don't want to be dismissed so easily.
Okay.
And people have been chewing on that. They say, well, then she, you know, of course, then we can't make her a saint. But the fact of the matter is she was saying something very specific, which is don't let me do all the work. You have to do the work also.
Mm-hmm. Before we bring Brother Aid in, she was also identified as one of four very important people in the United States. Spanning what period of time, Kate?
The period of time of her life?
Yeah, no. Like, so she was identified as one of four people. Americans, one of four people. I read it a little bit earlier on, but I've lost it here now. But one of four people who had contributed greatly to the Catholic faith.
Right. That was Pope Francis when he spoke in front of Congress in 2015. He listed her as one of the four most influential.
What an amazing... And this is are we talking about your grandmother here?
My grandmother.
Wow, you must be incredibly proud.
Well, you know, she kind of knocks you for a loop when you know her personally. As I mentioned, she was an incredibly powerful person with deep presence. And I knew her well until I was 20, which was when she died. And to have known her really is to spend the rest of your life trying to figure out what hit you.
And is that through, you know, typical grandmother traits or something completely different? Or
she was not a typical grandmother. she was very much involved with my family. My mother was her only daughter, and my mother had 9 children, of which I'm the youngest. And my grandmother was there for us all through our growing up.
Mm. The timelines are blowing my head off here because you don't seem old enough to be her granddaughter, if that makes sense. And you talk of remembering her as you approach 20. It's throwing my head off a little bit. Mm. But it's great to see you looking so well and in such good health outwardly, in any case. Brother Aid Green, what a remarkable lady. Firstly, of course, Kate, because it's great to... hear directly from someone who knew someone so special, right, and has that connection, but also the DNA connection, all of that kind of stuff. But also to hear of Dorothy Day too. It's I love hearing about people like this.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's been a great privilege for us to have Kate staying with us in Ards and sort of helping us along. And I mean, that's been in terms of kind of what she's been able to do on site or whatever, but also in a sense bringing Dorothy into our world, because mm-hmm. there's always this thing about the saints that, especially the ones that are closer to us, they tell us something about what it means to be a good person. So they reflect something of God, they reflect something of Jesus in the modern world. And I think that Dorothy was very Franciscan. I think that she had caught the same sort of insights that St. Francis had caught, and that Pope Francis is also sort of trying to help us to move along. So there are some great sort of reflections, resonances between what Dorothy, I think, was trying to do and what we're trying to do in our own sort of little and humble, modest way in Ards.
You know? Yes, exactly. But I mean, as was recognised, you know, you can look to her journey towards faith and you can, you know, put that in a modern context and reach new people. You, along with Kate, and this is the one of the main reasons we're speaking to you, are organising a retreat later this month. Talk to me a little bit about that, Brother Aid.
Well, actually, I'm not involved with Kate's.
Shall we defer to Kate on this? Yes. Are there two retreats?
There are two retreats.
Okay. Yeah. Well, should we talk about yours first?
Yeah. So the retreat that we're doing is part of a larger kind of project within the overall arts project, which I wouldn't mind talking to you a bit about before we finish.
No, I'll tell you, do you want to start there and then move into the retreat?
Okay. Yeah. So over the last 5 to 6 years, what we've come to understand in our own context is what we can do to renew our life and mission in Arts Friary. Mm-hmm. I think there's a huge amount of love for Arts Friary everywhere. I mean, it's worldwide. People know about us and they want to come and see us and be with us. And so, and part of that has been how we match or how we bring in kind of ecology into spirituality and how we make that Franciscan. So one big aspect of that is our farm, Joy Farm, as we've called it. The purpose of Joy Farm is going to be, our aim is to be producing food for people in Donegal that are experiencing food insecurity and food poverty. So a massive bulk, most of our food will be going to food banks and day centres within the Donegal area. So that's one way that we're trying to respond to what Pope Francis called the cry of the poor. And the cry of the earth, because we're doing that organically and we're doing that regeneratively. So we're trying to do the best practice possible for our land. Another aspect of that is our retreat centre. We're really committed to continuing our retreat programme, our retreat offering. We host retreats, and we're also trying to do something different with the way that we give retreats. So bringing in nature and ecology and things like that into our spirituality. That is involving a renovation of our retreat centre, because it was built in the 1970s and hasn't had a huge amount done to it since then, so it needs up modernising. And actually into the very near future, at some point in, we will have to look to renovate and do a big renovation, and actually we need help with that through donations. Financially, we are looking at how we can finance the bulk of it ourselves.
But look at whatever revenue streams might be there through schemes or grants
as well. We will be putting out a number of appeals and doing fundraising.
Yeah, we look forward to speaking to that. So you have a weekend retreat of poetry, music, silence and conversation from the 14th to the 16th of February. Who goes on these retreats? Is it locals? Is it people from the county? Do people fly in for them?
Yes.
All of the above?
All of the above. Okay. So we have a number of people that fly in from Scotland on various retreats. We've had people come all the way from Australia for certain retreats.
But do people be retreatists? Like, this is how they sort of get through life? Or do people have things going on in their life and this is a way of maybe connecting with spiritually? Yeah. Or I just wonder who the market is. I don't want to commercialise it, right? But you know what I mean? I'm just curious.
I think actually it tends to be people that are quite serious about their spiritual life.
Okay, they're there already almost.
Yeah, and would maybe have a kind of practice of taking at least one retreat a year as something. We also, well-being is a big part of the retreats that we host. We don't give them ourselves, but we host other people's. So it's people that are interested in...
Isn't it funny that kind of in the modern world, to get a break, we're going back to really what we forgot?
Mm,
isn't it our relationship with the land? Our relationship with ourselves, our surroundings. It's funny that we actually try and get snippets of that where that was quite common practice previously, not too long ago either.
And I think retreats offer you the opportunity, and they offer, what we try to do is we try to create spaces for encounter.
Mm.
Encounter with ourselves, human need, with God, with land, with others. And I think that that's what people get from retreats.
Another thing I wasn't aware of is when we talk about it, it's like, you know, there's a package there, again, not to commercialise it, but I don't think maybe everybody realises, because I think I'm quite normal and not everyone knows about this stuff, but, you know, it's in terms of your activities whilst you're there, there's accommodation involved, you know, like I mean, so you take an awful lot of the stuff that people might have to worry about to take part in this. You do that.
Yeah, and that's part of that creating the space for people. It's we're holding that space for people by, we have a number of really great cooks, so the food is always commented on. It's probably the biggest thing that we get in feedback, the food was great.
I'm sure there's it's up there. I'm sure the spiritual engagement with you, Brother Aids,
but that's
up there
part
as well.
Of it, isn't it? Of we course, want to create a homely space where people can come and they can kick off their shoes and their work boots and they can put on a pair of slippers and they can just encounter themselves. Yeah. They can encounter the land.
Physically,
of others.
Mentally, spiritually
absolutely,
recharged, I presume.
Absolutely.
Kate, talk to me about spiritual hunger and the artistic soul retreat. This is at the same time, am I correct? This is Friday the 14th. To Sunday 16th of February also. I just want to make sure I've got my notes correct. Here it is. Kate, what is your offering?
Well, I'm probably not as quite high-minded as Brother Aid. I am an artist. I love paint. I love color. And I also believe so strongly that looking at the world through the artist's eye, we really come to a greater understanding of ourselves and our relationship with however we see our spirit or the Holy Spirit or God or divine spirit, you know, however we define this. I think people, I certainly know, and seen and have spoke to people, I think there is a deep desire for people to explore the meaning of their own lives and to feel that their lives have meaning and to feel that that they are alive. And as an artist, I just I believe so much in the power of art to help us break through our verbalization of everything. And
it's a different way to express, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Not only, I mean, art is, of course,
or an additional way, actually, perhaps not different.
Yes, art is expression, but it also can go into a deeper level in which things come out that you did not expect.
Given that you. How into this you are, do you find, or maybe you do, as part of it, interpret people's work?
No. Oh, I do not do that.
Casually? Can you?
Casually. Only if they ask me.
Okay. I'm not saying you're looking over people's shoulders going, no, not good.
Oh, God, why are you,
no,
why are
I'm
you
not
here?
But you make it as easy as possible again in that if I'm correct, you provide materials and what have you, and guidance, and you can talk of Dorothy, and it's described as the spiritual hunger and the artistic soul retreat led by Kate, who we're chatting to, Kate Hennessy, who's granddaughter of Doris Day. It runs from the 14th to the 16th of February at Arts Friary, and explore your spiritual voice through painting, drawing, and writing in a reflective, intimate setting. And you can get more information at info@ardsfriary.ie. It must be great, or maybe it's not, but I presume it is when you meet the people for the first time and working them out and connecting and understanding and learning or educating. It must be a nice thing.
Absolutely.
That human interaction, if you get where
absolutely.
I'm coming
from. I mean, that's the reason to do it, isn't it? To get like-minded people to gather together and discuss these thorny questions, you know, that we all love.
And Brother Aid has been talking of, and it's in the context of the month of Bridget, of course, a weekend retreat of poetry, music, silence and conversation. Take time to welcome the light of healing, creativity and new growth. Again, any information on that, info@ardsfriary.ie. Brother Aid, we're blessed, aren't we, to have these things on our doorstep. I imagine often maybe someone... If we're listening to this interview, if we were in Germany, for an example, they might go, wow, okay, I would dream of doing that, but maybe cannot make it work. Yet here we are with this fantastic thing on our doorstep, and people like yourself with a vision for the future as well, and what ARDS is and what it can become, an ambition, you know, which I presume you have the hand of God on your shoulder too. You're guided in much of this. I would hope, Brother Aid.
We all hope that. I mean, there's no way to tell for sure, I suppose. But you're right.
It's
I
called
think,
faith, brother.
Oh, yeah, faith. That's the one. Yes. No, but I mean, you do... Thomas Merton, who was one of the other four that was mentioned with Dorothy...
Influential Americans,
He has this beautiful vocation prayer where he says, I do what I do because I love you, and I'm sure that I love you. But actually... You can never be too sure that you're doing the right thing, but you're right. You go, you put one step ahead of each other in faith that this is going to work. And the Imbolc retreat that we're doing on the 14th, myself, Brother Philip, a man called John Keane from Dublin, that's around welcoming the light. It's about hope, because the whole of the spring, what's happening in the landscape. Is about hope. You know, I really like the snowdrops are out, but they don't stay out forever.
No.
You know, they're not spring. They're signs of spring. So it's the signs of hope. And I think in the world that we live in at the moment, being able to recognize those signs of hope is really important.
Okay, yeah, allowing really ourselves to actually see them and enjoy them. I think sometimes, too, people have a bit of guilt of being hopeful. It can be hard. There can be hard emotions to. It depends on people's personalities, but there is always hope.
Yeah.
And those new bulbs and what comes from them show. Two fantastic opportunities for you. Even if it means just going from your own local area, why not? Ardsfriary.ie is the website. We'll link this stuff on our socials. But also, if you're interested in either of these two retreats, and both have a great deal to offer, info@ardsfriary.ie. Kate Hennessy, it's been lovely speaking to you. It's been lovely learning a little bit more about Dorothy Day.
Thank you.
And also, Brother Aid Green, whenever you wish to come back, you're always welcome here, of course.
Thank you.
And it's wonderful to see such ambition and plans for a real jewel in the jewel of the jewel of our crown. Thank you both very much indeed.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by Local Enterprise Office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the Local Enterprise Office to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Good morning, Chris Ashmore. Welcome into studio.
Good morning, Greg Hughes.
Good to have you with us. It is the day we publish the Business Matters podcast from Highland Radio on our website, but we also use it as an opportunity to get Chris in to get a bit of news off him. And interesting reading from the Udarsna Geltokta report, Chris.
Yes, the report, the annual report for 2024 is out. Nationally, 2,647 people working in Donegal, in Udarsna Geltokta client companies. 72 new jobs approved in the Donegal Gaeltacht last year. Now, the overall numbers in firms that are backed by Udras in the county were down by 3%, but there's a number of new jobs expected to come on stream this year. And interesting to note sort of the areas that they're involved in, Greg. There's a new company, Cairéal Mhic Gilleadh Tuirreanta, in Gwydor and also in Crawley, and it's involved in concrete manufacturing products. Currently employs about 30 people, hoping that'll go up to 52. Then there's a small company, Tíatha Beaga Tuirreanta, which is in the business park down in Gwydor. They're involved in modular house and micro house manufacturing. And indeed, there's another company, CEH Tuirreanta, which is also doing modular house manufacturing, and it's anticipated that up to 20 people will be employed there. So all sort of construction, housing related.
Good, steady, long-term jobs as well. And I think the report, the launch report, was used as a reminder that we need to get our finger out in terms of our infrastructure, because this west-east divide in terms of our resilience to storms, not good. If you're looking to attract businesses, you need to be able to prove that you've got a good, steady electrical infrastructure as well. So an opportune time to mention that. You talked of housing developments. We've mentioned it before. We are starting to see commencements and progress in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, look, if anything related to housing, in terms of employment, the prospects looking very good the next 10 years, because be it the construction, look at all the spin-off jobs, carpets, paint, windows, anything that's related to housing, we're going to be having people. It's going to take us 10, maybe, who knows, 20 years to catch up with the demand there. So it's a good sector to be in on the employment front.
Yeah, and if your young ones are looking at third level, I'll tell you, there's some work to be had there. New car sales.
To your usual topic, Greg.
You bring it up every month.
Now and again. Well, January is a big month in the car business because people like to get that 251 reg, as it is in this case. But interestingly, nationally, new car sales were up 7% in January. Well, I should say new car registrations, to be absolutely correct. Here in Donegal, 835 new vehicles registered, up 9% on last year. So it's a sign of a good economy when they're going the right way.
PCPs, maybe.
Yeah, there's a lot on PCP.
It could be a three-year cycle as well, too.
But significantly, new electric car registrations nationally were up about 20%, and in Donegal up 33.9%. Now, look, a relatively small base from 59 to 79, but after a few bumps in the road, so to speak, last year...
If they get the infrastructure sorted out, there's never been more electric cars. Now, you've seen electric cars at the same list price as hybrid or petrols, so... But I was driving into work today, funny enough, and I thought, why do people not produce a car with your 500-kilometre range, an electric car, but have a really small petrol engine in it?
Well,
with a 10-litre, 20-litre tank, I don't know what it might be, to eliminate the anxiety range.
Yeah,
so it's primarily electric. You drive it all the time with electric, but you've almost got like a take-home engine.
Yeah.
With the modern design, it can't be too difficult. Yeah. Anyway, that's interesting, and it's good to see it. It's interesting to see a bounce back. What's the breakdown of the different...
this is touching on what you've just said there. Petrol still the most popular, 28% of the new car sales in Donegal in January. Hybrid, 26%. So... it looks as if it's not going to be too far away that hybrid will be the most popular choice. Petrol, it used to be not too long ago, 50-60%, and our old diesel friends down under 20%. So there's a big shift.
It's hard to get a straight diesel engine now.
They're getting fewer and fewer, indeed.
SSC Airtricity.
Yeah, just wanted to mention a couple of other things, Greg. SSC Airtricity are going to go ahead with the... they've plans for a 300 million power station down in Tarbert in Kerry. There's been a plant down there for years, over 50 years old. But the significant thing about this is that the new power plant will use sustainable biofuel. So that is a taste of things to come. Also to mention this week, I don't know if you've been into your local public house and bought a pint since the increase went up, but we're now talking about a lot of places, 30 cent on the pint of Guinness. In Belfast, you can pay £7 for a pint in a hotel, and in the Temple Bar area, Greg, the 10 euro pint is here.
Well, firstly, I'm not in Belfast, I'm not in Dublin, and I'm in a position where I don't drink enough really anymore for it to have any material impact.
It's getting expensive.
If I get out and have 3-4 pints of them, a good boy. So, it's not, I know, say, people drink in different ways, it would be more impactful. On to the show.
Yes, on the show this week. Well, the countdown is on to the Highland Radio Hospitality Awards.
I'm kind of disappointed this year because I'm presenting again this year and the last awards... McElhenney's in Ballybuffet were involved in that, and they dressed us up, so I looked the absolute best, right? So I'm now a bit nervous that I'm going to have to dress myself for the Highland Radio Awards, and it is highly competitive. How you look?
Pressure on, Greg. So pressure on.
I'm going to have to seriously start working on an outfit.
Yeah. So they're on the beginning of March in Jackson's Hotel. There's a shortlist there. If you go to the Highland Radio website, you can find out all the different nominations. So to find out more, and in particular about how the voting goes and who's judging it, I've been speaking with Sean Quinn, head of sales here at Highland Radio, and he's so upbeat about the forthcoming awards.
The prestige of the Highland Radio Hospitality Awards again is bigger than I had anticipated, and the reaction that we've had from the businesses in the lead up to it has been phenomenal as well. And that's credit to what we delivered last year, and I'm sure we will deliver even bigger and better this year. But I totally agree with you. It's great to be recognised. And when if somebody's in scrolling and they're looking at things and saying, where's that business? I must go and try that. They must be good because they've been shortlisted. So there's no losers here. I think everybody's a winner. And I said that last year in the room, that everybody sitting here tonight is a winner because you've been shortlisted by your customers, our listeners. So you're doing something right.
Can't believe you got him to get all that out in 46 seconds. Normally it takes me 20 minutes to drag that out of him.
The full interview is a bit longer.
I'm only joking, Sean. You're fantastic. I'm only messing. He and all of us here at Highland Radio put so much effort into that. It is, folks, an amazing night out. And we look forward to seeing all of those shortlisted in Jackson's in Ballybuffet, which I hadn't gone to an event before in. It's wonderful. The staff are wonderful. The owners actually are the listen to the show as well too. Lovely, yeah. Down to earth people. But creating so much employment, investing so much in the region, fair play to them.
Just to say, voting will close on the 10th of February and the event itself the 2nd of March.
Rightio, Stone.
Stone, yes. Sean Peoples from Drumkeen spent some time in Canada, got into the whole stoneworks business. He was based down in County Meath, came back up to Donegal, particularly focusing on the use of slate. And, you know, Greg, you go around any county now, you see a lot of nice new modern houses, and there's a little bit of slate maybe near the front door or at a side annex. It's become a very popular form of decorative work in many cases. He uses slate quarried in St. Johnston, and business is going really well.
That's Sean again. Here's another Sean.
I specialise in two things. Slate is a big seller for me. I also do a lot of restoration work. But how it began, I basically went to Canada, and we started out there in Canada doing stone work, and we started up a company, and then was at that for 10 years. We moved back to Ireland, and I completed the work on Centre Parks in Ballymahon and Longford. We done all the stone work there, and then basically I moved from Navan, where I was living, back to Donegal again, where I'm from, and we moved back and started doing slate, and we specialised in slate, and have been doing so since.
More from the two Seans on the podcast available for you today on our website, highlandradio.com. It's on Sunday evening as well, Chris.
Yes, after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday.
And your email address.
Businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Have a fantastic Wednesday, everyone.